Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
City leaders to discuss Midland Development Corporation incentive for North Dakota firm by Stuart Doreen. There will be Midland City Council discussion when city leaders decide on a $1.135 million incentive for a North Dakota engineering firm. The firm is KLJ Engineering of Bismarck, North Dakota, and it will establish regional headquarters and create 75 new engineering and surveying jobs in Midland with an average annual gross compensation of $79,892 per job, according to city documents. KLJ will be eligible for a job creation incentive from the Midland Development Corporation of $15,000 per new job, the city reports in its agenda packet. This incentive is contingent upon jobs being maintained over the term of the agreement, which is 10 years. Corrales has questions. At-large Councilman Dan Corrales told radio station KWEL earlier this week that he is concerned about using local sales tax dollars to help a business from North Dakota while there are already 47 registered engineering firms and 20 land survey firms here. Corrales worried about an incentivized company pilfering employees from firms already here and the approval of the Midland Development Corporation agreement seen as city leaders picking favorites. He mentioned that KLJ already has a presence in Midland, has a person on the Governmental Affairs Committee on the Midland Chamber of Commerce, and used that information to say sometimes it is who you know, even though the Midland Chamber of Commerce does not run the Midland Development Corporation. Bobby Burns, president and CEO of the Midland Chamber, told the Reporter Telegram that no one at the chamber has researched, studied, or discussed the KLJ project, and that the chamber, including its Government Affairs Committee, has zero connections with the MDC about KLJ incentives. Corrales also said he is worried about firms already in Midland can't speak out against the deal because how do you express dismay when you do business with local government? I have a hard time seeing a lot of local taxpayers wanting to put money into the pockets of a Bismarck, North Dakota engineering firm to compete with Midland businesses, Corrales told the radio station. Midland Mayor Lori Blong stated there is a case to make for the agreement, as tens of millions of dollars each year leave Midland for engineering and design work done by companies outside the city, including millions spent by the MDC and City of Midland. She added that the MDC has spoken with several other similar engineering firms in Midland and has indicated it will offer similar incentives to existing Midland firms who wish to expand and bring new jobs to Midland. KLJ plans to bring in current employees to Midland from their existing locations, as well as recruiting for their Midland office, Blong said. The economic impact of new engineering jobs in Midland goes beyond the 75 jobs created. The forecast is an additional 47 jobs created through indirect and induced impact, along with $30 million in sales and output and $12.7 million in compensation. Midland is competing for this project with other cities in the Southwest, Blong said. The Office of the Governor for Economic Development has vetted this program in tandem with the MDC. The Midland City Council will meet at 10 a.m. Tuesday inside Council Chamber at Midland City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. The Oil-Filled Photographer Fights for Industry Pros by Morgan Taylor Thomas. All throughout town, in office buildings and homes, Midlanders can find the work of James Durbin, operating as the Oil-Filled Photographer. Durbin travels around the region showcasing the hidden beauty behind the gas and oil energy industry. Yet the journey to becoming a local legend came with risks and discomfort. After studying photojournalism at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale, the Missouri native worked as a journalistic photographer for more than 10 years, domestically and overseas. He earned many awards as a former Texas Press Association Star Photojournalist of the Year finalist. When he joined the Midland Reporter-Telegram in 2012, he began to realize the importance of oil and gas, not only regionally, but worldwide as well. Gas and oil found me. I was very content in journalism and wanted to continue in that industry, but I always was just captivated and curious about the energy business. I always tried to work aspects of that industry into my photography, and while covering events and different things around this region, Durbin explained, companies took notice of it, and they would reach out to me to come do shoots for them on my own time. It just continued to develop more and more. After winning the Midland Entrepreneurial Challenge, Durbin realized the need for energy industry photo professionals. It could be more than a side hustle. So his nearly 7 years at the Reporter-Telegram came to an end as he decided to pursue the oil-filled photographer business full-time. It was still very hard to leave my job and strike out on my own, but I knew that I had the support of my family and a lot of our local industry partners, Durbin admitted. This area has had no voice. This industry, typically, has had no voice, no advocacy for it, other than what it tries to do for its own self. There was just a lack of oil photography. Sometimes people still don't think there's anybody that specializes in this type of thing. So making sure companies know that we're here doing it is still one of the biggest battles we face. However, Durbin and the rest of his team at the Oilfield Photographer Incorporated don't work for the money. For them, telling the story of the hardworking women and men who make up the energy industry means the most. Without them, the world would stop. What I try and do is take these sites that are familiar to so many people and showcase them in a way that they may not have expected. I still look at all of this industry landscape through fresh eyes. Even though I've been here for a long time and consider it my home, I am still fascinated and curious by it. I appreciate and love the juxtaposition of everyday life against a landscape of energy industry equipment, Durbin said. As for the future of his role in the community, Durbin hopes to continue his advocacy, working directly with industry partners and customer companies to tell their story in a positive way. In his position, Durbin hopes to mitigate any misconceptions outsiders have about the energy business through exceptional artwork and large engagement. Check out Durbin and the rest of the Oilfield Photographer Incorporated team at theoilfieldphotographer.com. Influence of pioneer Jim Henry in Midland can't be replaced by Stuart Doreen. The times, they are a-changin'. Twice in the last month, we have been reminded of what once was will be no more. First, ExxonMobil pounced on one of the great corporate citizens of our community, acquiring Pioneer Natural Resources for an eye-popping amount and a transaction for the record books. Second, Jim Henry passed away. Oil editor Mella McEwen's article Thursday paid tribute to the revered Sprayberry expert, a Petroleum Museum Hall of Famer, and one of the real innovators of our time. In two head-shaking headlines, eras have ended, and it feels like a portion of the personality of the local industry is gone. We know this will not be the last time. Too much speculation of the next larger independence to be swallowed up has already started, and let's face it, the Hall of Famers and Top Hand Award winners aren't getting any younger. We write this because we see the corporatization of the industry, and therefore Midland, occurring. Interestingly, the community is getting younger. 32 is the average age, right? And those young Midlanders bring a different perspective than the Midlanders riding into the sunset and knocking on heaven's door. Their vision for a future Midland is carpeted in artificial turf, occupied by the latest and greatest big box stores, and, in my opinion, will suck dry the personality that made Midland. Well, the Midland in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s. That is probably the case with many growing communities and areas where legions of outsiders have moved into, planted their flags, and called home. Midland truly might be moving closer to becoming a long-distance suburb of Houston or Dallas with every high-profile oil industry transaction and every Ryder truck moving into Midland. Again, it is not better or worse, but different. I have turned into my parents, coincidentally Midland High graduates in the 1960s, but there is something about Midland that requires a little bit of resistance to the construction of generic shopping centers and the lack of uniqueness one might find driving up the tollway or Central Expressway in Dallas. Maybe today's opus is more frustration that our future might not provide the type of regionalistic appropriateness of Pioneer Natural Resources, corporate, or Jim Henry, personal. Future philanthropy will be more formulaic, and conversations with our oil leaders will require a corporate communications staffer who scrubs out all the need-to-know information of a carefully crafted press statement meant to satisfy those on Wall Street in New York, not Midland. Midland will always be a special place, and not because Bass Pro Shops is coming or because a Topgolf might follow. Those are nice, but not what Midland is about. Just like there is nothing wrong with ConocoPhillips or ExxonMobil, they'll likely will be the best Midland can hope for following the latest round of mergers and acquisitions. But there was a sense of pride, knowing Tim Leach at Concho, Scott Sheffield at Pioneer, Jim Henry or Clayton Williams had Midland's back, and that can't be replaced. Mrs. America 2023, Regina Stock, Optimistic About Cancer Diagnosis, by Mercedes Cordero. Almost a month after doctors discovered a mass on her left kidney, Midland resident and newly crowned Mrs. America, Regina Stock, shared her cancer diagnosis. Stock, who won Mrs. America 2023 in August, shared on her social media on September 25th that she was taken to the emergency room where doctors found a 14-centimeter mass on her left kidney. She shared on Instagram on Wednesday that a specialist in Dallas confirmed what they already suspected. "We are not that surprised because, like I said, we kind of expected that already. I had 3 weeks before my appointment to be upset about it and to process it," Stock said. Stock stated her doctor's confident they can go in with surgery and take it all out and be done with it. Because of the size of the mass, Stock is not a candidate for robotic surgery and will have to have open surgery. While she does not have a scheduled surgery date, Stock believes she will still be in the clear a month before the Mrs. World pageant to prepare for the competition. Despite her diagnosis, Stock is hopeful. "This is the best-case scenario. We're pretty happy with the outcome of everything, despite the diagnosis." Former Mrs. America 2021, Brooklyn Rivera, has started a GoFundMe to help Stock and her family. Following her surgery, Stock will not be able to work for about 6 weeks. "As former Mrs. America title holders, we deeply understand the power of unity and compassion within our community. Today, we stand together to rally behind Regina and her family, aiming to provide them with the support they desperately need during this challenging journey," the GoFundMe states. Opera still feeling COVID-19 effects, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. One of Midland's longest-running entertainment groups has been scraping by since the pandemic. Now, it is asking for help. The Permian Basin Opera, which began in the 1980s, serves as the region's only opera-based nonprofit organization. Made up of basin folks who love to showcase their talents, the PBO has been a prominent group in the community. Every year, the crew's Christmas performance fundraiser and spring gala serve as PBO's main financial gainers. Yet, the crippling side effects of the COVID-19 pandemic have caused PBO to face uncertainty. We're just trying to get back ahead of everything. That's really the baseline. We have so many fun things planned for the future, like our youth mentor program. We're looking at hosting everything we usually do. We always do opera in the schools and a large opera for everyone. But we're just hoping that we could reach out to Midland and the cities around. We're right on the nick, paycheck to paycheck, so we wanted to see if people would be interested in donating to us so we can succeed here in the Permian Basin, Katie Oswemke, PBO Vice President, said. Katie said the opera also wants to start including more opportunities for locals. The last 3 to 4 years, we've really been focusing on trying to bring in professionals. That way, we could really get the community interested in Permian Basin opera. We have done that, but we now feel that it's even more important that we also bring in the community, Oswemkamp explained. So those slight differences that we're going to be doing with our activities, events, and organization of things is still bringing outside professionals holding auditions for locals. The $10,000 goal allows Permian Basin Opera a 3 months reserve. This enables the organization to not only feel safe and secure if anything were to happen again, but also achieve their goals of community engagement and expansion. Johnny Carino's in Midland officially closed by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Johnny Carino's announced via a sign on the restaurant doors that the Midland location is officially closed. On the Johnny Carino's website, Midland has also been erased from the Texas locations. The Facebook page has also been scrubbed. The restaurant sat on the Loop 250 frontage road in the same areas as Fazoli's and Chewy's. The closing comes just a few months after the franchise underwent new management, earning it many raving reviews and praise through the Midland Area Foodies Facebook page. There's currently no news on what will take over the building. Solicitors General depart Paxton's office after trial by Lauren McGaughey, the Dallas Morning News. Judge Stone and Christopher Hilton, two top lawyers at the Texas Attorney General's office who took leave to defend Attorney General Ken Paxton during his impeachment trial, have resigned. Stone and Hilton will continue to practice law as part of the private firm they created during the impeachment trial, their representatives told the Dallas Morning News on Thursday. Stone served as the state solicitor general and Hilton as the chief of the general litigation division, both senior positions at the office of the attorney general. The two were involved in dozens of high-profile lawsuits during their tenure. State employment records with the comptroller's office do not yet reflect the resignations. Paxton's agency responded to a records request filed Wednesday for Stone and Hilton's termination documents, noting there was no information responsive to your request. An agency spokesperson did not respond to questions from the Dallas Morning News, but did confirm their departure to the Austin American-Statesman and KVUE. In May, Stone and Hilton, as well as four other agency lawyers, took a leave of absence from the agency to defend Paxton against impeachment allegations that he abused his office to help friend and campaign donor Nate Paul. Paxton, a Republican, was cleared after a two-week trial and returned to work last month. Stone and Hilton returned briefly to state employment after the trial to tie up their service before resigning, their representative said, adding that they had always intended to shift to private work after the trial. However, in letters requesting the leaves of absence, both said they intended to return to the agency after the trial was over. Police investigates possible abduction in Central Midland by Mercedes Cordero. The Midland Police Department reported Thursday afternoon it is investigating a possible abduction. On Thursday at approximately 1:40 a.m., officers with the Midland Police Department responded to a call of a reported abduction at Winfield Road and I Street, MPD said in a press release. The department did not provide additional details about the possible abduction. An investigation is underway. Gas prices, drop in Midland, can't keep up with state average, by Stuart Doreen. The average price of gasoline dropped, but the decline in Midland again trailed the state average, according to AAA Texas. The organization reported this week that the price of gas in Midland fell 7 cents to $3.25 a gallon. The state average dropped 11 cents to $3.03. Midland's trailing the state average is a trend. Over the past two reports, the price of gas has fallen 14 cents in Midland, and that decline trails not only Odessa at 15 cents, but the state at 27 cents. AAA Texas report shows Midland is home to the third most expensive average of the 27 large metropolitan areas surveyed. Only El Paso at $3.37 and College Station Bryan at $3.26 show higher averages. Lubbock and Amarillo round out the five most expensive averages at $3.21 and $3.18 respectively. The average in Odessa is $3.17. The state's average gas price has declined for the fifth week in a row, according to AAA Texas. Gas prices are following the usual autumn trend of going down. However, changing market conditions are creating uncertainty as to how long the downward trend can last, said Daniel Armbruster, AAA Texas spokesperson, in the weekly report. Across the average, the price dropped 2 cents this week in Abilene to $2.95, 13 cents in Amarillo, 7 cents in El Paso, 10 cents in Lubbock, and 8 cents in San Angelo to $3.03. The cheapest average in the state can be found in the Red River metropolitan area of Sherman-Denison at $2.87 a gallon. AAA Texas also reported the average in Midland this week is 14 cents less than the average 1 year ago. The state average declined 24 cents over the same period. Obituaries and death notices. Jimmy Devon Smith. Jimmy Devon Smith, 87, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, October 14, 2023. Jim was born on May 6, 1936, to Nora Bell and Clyde Smith in Greenway, Arkansas. He is survived by his three children, sons Philip and Scott, and daughter Terry Folds. He had seven grandchildren. He is also survived by his dear younger sister, Faye Cantrell. He is preceded in death by his parents, Nora Bell and Clyde Smith, his beloved wife of 61 years, Frances Jane Smith, brothers Roy, Alfred, Ezra, and sister Dean Haley. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, October 21st, 2023 at Downtown Church of Christ. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Brenda Boyd. Brenda Lane Boyd, 69, of Aguado, Puerto Rico, passed away Sunday, October 1, 2023. Brenda was born on November 10, 1953, in Leamington, New Mexico, to T.D. Doc and Dorothy Lester Roberts. Brenda is survived by her sons Calvin Farrer, Corey Farrer, and Bradley Boyd, one brother, Kenneth Roberts, one sister, Sandra Moore, and three grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents, Doc and Dorothy Roberts, her husband, Jim Boyd, her grandson, Lane Farrer, and her brother, Jackie Roberts. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 21st, 2023, at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Lubbock, Texas. Arthur Levi Shandu Dusen Jr. Arthur Levi Shandu Dusen Jr., age 81, passed away Friday, October 13, 2023. A funeral will be held Saturday, October 21, 2023, at 2 p.m. at Antioch Baptist Church. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Jim Henry. Jim Henry, 89 of Midland, passed away October 17, 2023. Celebration of Life will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, October 23, 2023, at First Methodist Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory. Nieves Lavario. Nieves Lavario of Odessa passed from this life on October 13, 2023, in Odessa, Texas. Funeral services will be held on October 20, 2023, 2 p.m., at American Heritage Funeral Home, with burial immediately following. Susan J. Garcia. Susan J. Garcia, 65, passed away on Tuesday, October 17, 2023. Viewing will be Sunday, October 22, 2023, from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Monday, October 23, 2023, at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proft, October 19th, 2023. Permian Basin Road Safety Luncheon Series next heads to Monahans, October 19th, 2023. By staff report, the Permian Road Safety Coalition, PRSC, is partnering with Ryder to host its final Road Safety Luncheon Series of 2023, which will this time take place in Monahans on Thursday, November 2nd. The event runs from 10 a.m. CDT to 1 p.m. at the Ward County Event Center, although doors open at 8 a.m. Pre-event festivities, including a parking lot demonstration of the Street Driving Academy, start at 8:30 a.m. Rowdy Resources is the presenting sponsor for the event, and via its generosity, a complimentary lunch will be served. Guest presenters include representatives from Newsom Gale, Ryder, and the Texas Department of Public Safety. The Texas Department of Transportation will also present its Far West Texas Truck Parking Implementation Plan. Click here to download and hashtag in the streak. The Midland-based PRSC is leading an effort to improve road safety and reduce the number of traffic-related injuries and deaths in the Permian Basin in collaboration with oil and natural gas operators, oil field service and transportation companies, non-governmental and governmental organizations. Previous luncheons in its ongoing traveling series this year took place in Midland, Carlsbad, and Fort Stockton. Learn more about PRSC at its website here and follow its Facebook page for updates. WTS Chamber Choral set for first recital of season at Midland College, October 19, 2023, by staff report. The West Texas Symphony Chamber Choral will perform its first recital of the season next Tuesday, October 24th at 7:30 p.m. inside the Wagner Brown Auditorium at Midland College. This unique event will take you on a musical journey through Latin America, capturing the lively and diverse spirit of its culturally rich heritage. Dr. Juan Hernandez is the Chamber Choral Director, and Dr. Juan Kong Lee will serve as piano accompanist for this performance. General admission tickets are $25 and $12 for students. Click to purchase online or call 800-514-3849 or at the door. Concert program is available on here. Find this story in Audio for the Blind and Low Vision Adults 2 p.m. daily on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream.
Broadband waives landline phone charges for customers calling Israel. Astound Broadband, the sixth largest U.S. cable provider, powered by leading regional providers, RCN, Grande Communications, Grande, Wave Broadband Wave, and InTouch Systems, InTouch, is waiving customer fees associated with calling Israel from the United States. Starting October 10th, international calling charges for Astound broadband landline phone customers will be waived when calling Israel through November 15th.
Mayo Clinic Minute. Why you and your family need a flu shot. If you haven't had the flu in a few years, there's a reason. As Dr. Napuni Rajapaksi, a pediatric infectious disease physician with the Mayo Clinic Children's Center, shares, all the more reason to ensure you and your family are vaccinated this year. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone 6 months and older get a flu shot and make it a goal to be vaccinated by the end of October. Quote, we know that our population-level immunity to influenza is lower than usual because we've had lower rates during the COVID times, end quote, says Rajapaksi. Public health measures during the pandemic, wearing masks, washing hands, and social distancing, not only helped reduce COVID-19 transmission, but also lowered the spread of the flu. Quote, fewer people have had influenza infection and illness. They don't have the antibodies from that experience. We're all the more dependent on the antibodies from vaccination to protect us in that situation, end quote, she says. Why get a flu shot? Rajapaksi says getting vaccinated is an important way to build immunity and prevent infection. Quote, and so the recommendations still remain that anyone over 6 months of age should get an influenza vaccine this year, end quote, she says. This is especially true of young children, older adults, and those with weakened immune systems who are at higher risk of severe illness due to the flu. Quote, people's protection is going to come from vaccination rather than recent infection, and that makes it all the more important to get the vaccine, end quote, says Rajapaksi. Who should get flu shots? Everyone aged 6 months and older should get a yearly flu vaccine. It's especially important for those at a higher risk of severe flu complications. Those at risk, higher risk of complications from flu include young children under age 2, adults older than age 65, residents of nursing homes and other long-term care facilities, people who are pregnant or plan to be pregnant during flu season, people with weakened immune systems, American Indians or Alaska Natives, people with chronic illnesses such as asthma, heart disease, kidney disease, liver disease, and diabetes. Getting the flu shot has important benefits. It reduces flu cases, doctor visits, missed work, and school days due to flu, and lessens symptom severity, lowering flu-related hospitalizations and deaths. Along with vaccination, practicing good hand hygiene and avoiding people who are ill are ways to prevent transmission and illness.
Pet of the Week, Athena, by OA Life, October 15, 2023. Athena, a six-month-old female Doberman mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Athena or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 2230 West Sycamore or call 432-257-4311 or visit www.odessahumanesociety.org or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $75. To help support HSO, donations are welcomed at tinyurl.com/279URB4S. Donations will go towards kennels, cat house, and adoption center.
Chambers join forces to get out the vote. Representatives from three Chambers of Commerce on Monday hosted the first of three community voter registration and education meetings at the Headley West Odessa Boys and Girls Clubs. The main item on the November 7th ballot is the $336 million bond from Ector County ISD that will go for a variety of projects such as a new career and technical education center in southern Ector County, maintenance, and a new middle school in far west Odessa. A couple of members of the Political Action Committee, Odessans for a Bright Future, which advocates for the bond, attended, but very few community members. The three-proposition bond won't affect the newly approved tax rate of 1.04 total tax rate. This is a decrease from the total rate of $1.17792. The decrease is because of tax compression passed by the legislator. Voters can vote for one or all of the propositions. Election day is November 7th. The deadline to register is October 10th. Early voting runs from October 23rd through November 3rd. Edgar County ISD District 3 Trustee Wayne Woodall was on hand for the meeting. He could not advocate for the bond, only provide factual answers to questions pertaining to the location of the new middle school. Woodall said there are some locations coming down the pike. Woodall said the location of the middle school will be given to the October 10th school board meeting. Maintenance needs were decided by experts, and people can see that on the ECISD website under the Bond 2023 tab. The safety and security included in the bond involves items such as communications equipment, the PA system, a new camera system and lighting at Ratliff Stadium. The CTE facility will centralize everything into one building. It will also be used by Odessa College at night and on weekends. Odessa Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Renee Earle said CTE is very important because there are so many companies who need employees. She noted that the Frost Technical Building is bursting at the seams with students. This will allow the students to have a top-notch facility, faculty, and just really have a learning environment that they deserve, Earle said. Woodall said it will house about 400 students full-time and 1,500 to 2,500 throughout the day. Welding teacher Nate Armendariz said was on the board committee and is now part of Odessans for a Bright Future, said it was determined that there were $1.6 billion in needs in ECISD. What we did is we tried to break everything down based on all the information that we had about the needs throughout the district, Armendariz said. They came to a consensus that they would try to fix what was needed most. Chris Walker, president and CEO of the Black Chamber of Commerce, said they were remaining neutral, but they wanted to get involved and give everybody a chance to voice their opinion. Walker said he hears people say they weren't given a chance to say what they think. That's what we're trying to eliminate this time. We want you to be able to come out. We can't tell you one way or the other. We have to stay neutral, but we want you to at least go to the polls and voice your opinion. That way, our numbers are up. We would love for everybody to be a little more concerned about what goes on in our community, Walker said. I know a lot of people don't have kids in the system, and they pretty much don't care. I've heard from both sides that they have no kids in school, so it doesn't matter. Yes, it does, he added. Eventually, someone in your family will be affected. He encouraged people to get others involved. Listen, ask questions, and come to chamber office to ask questions before the election. Tina Leal, representing the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, said they want to make sure they provide all the information and that everybody in the community is educated about what's going on. Leal thanked everyone for the information and said she would pass it along. The propositions for the ECISD bond are Proposition A, a new career and technical education center in South Odessa, a new middle school in Far West Odessa, property maintenance at every campus, complete renovation of the Permian High School auditorium and JROTC faculty facility, new bus repair facility, upgrades for the Ag Farm in West Odessa, LED lighting at Permian Odessa High School baseball stadiums, a new transition learning center for special needs students, safety and security needs. Proposition B, upgrades for the 45-year-old Ratliff Stadium complex. Proposition C, investment in athletics, including an indoor practice facility at Odessa High School and new turf at Permian High School. A complete list can be found at OdessansVoteYes.com. Woodall said the Transition Learning Facility teaches special education students to go into the workforce. It serves them up to age 22. Earl said regardless of where you stand on the issues, it is important to register to vote. There was someone on hand to help those who were not registered. You need an ID, updated name and address, add phone number. You fill out the information and it will be returned to you. A card will be sent to you and then you will be registered to vote in Ector County, Earl said. When you go to the polls, there are people who can walk you through the voting process. I often hear people say, well, my vote doesn't matter. It absolutely matters. Every vote matters, and when we don't have very many people going to the polls, that is not a representation of this community or any community, Earl said. This is not just a problem in Odessa and Ector County. This is all over the state and all over the county, she added. I think, taking it for granted, the opportunity to vote, and that we have the incredible power here. That's why our chambers wanted to come together and really focus on the importance of being registered and going to the polls. Two more meetings are scheduled for 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Woodson Boys and Girls Club, 1037 West Murphy Street, and Thursday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Wilkerson Boys and Girls Club, 800 East 13th Street. The gatherings are aimed at discussing the upcoming Ector County ISD bond, hearing information on the state constitutional amendments, and encouraging people to register and turn out to vote.
Court allows law banning gender-affirming care for minors to take effect, by Jim Vertuno. The Texas Supreme Court allowed a new state law banning gender-affirming care for minors to take effect on Friday, setting up Texas to be the most populous state with such restrictions on transgender children. Legal advocates who sued on behalf of the families and doctors, including the American Civil Liberties Union, called the law and High Court's decision Thursday cruel. Transgender youth and their families are forced to confront the start of the school year fearful of what awaits them. But let us be clear, the fight is far from over, the advocacy groups said in a joint statement. Last week, a state district judge ruled the pending law violated the rights of transgender children and their families to seek appropriate medical care, and violated doctors' ability to follow well-established, evidence-based medical guidelines under threat of losing their license. The judge issued a temporary injunction to block the law, and state officials immediately appealed to the state's highest court for civil cases. The order from the all-Republican Supreme Court lifting the injunction and allowing the law to take effect did not explain the decision. The order did not address the lower court's ruling that the law is unconstitutional, and a full hearing is expected. More than 20 states have adopted laws to ban some gender-affirming care for minors, although some are not yet in effect or have been put on hold by courts. The Texas law would prevent transgender minors from accessing hormone therapies, puberty blockers, and transition surgeries, even though medical experts say such surgical procedures are rarely performed on children. Children who already started the medications being banned are required to be weaned off in a medically appropriate manner, the law said. Texas kids are safer today because of the Supreme Court ruling, said Jonathan Covey, policy director of Texas Values, a conservative group that supported the law. Protecting children from harmful and dangerous gender transition surgeries and puberty blockers is in the best interest of the child and something we all agree on. The lawsuit argued the Texas law will have devastating consequences for transgender teens if they are unable to obtain critical treatment recommended by their physicians and parents. Several doctors who treat transgender children said they worried their patients will suffer deteriorating mental health, which could possibly lead to suicide if they are denied safe and effective treatment. The Texas ban was signed into law in June by Republican Governor Greg Abbott, who was the first governor to order the investigation of families of transgender minors who receive gender-affirming care. Typically, following a hurricane, that impacts oil gas operations, and there can be brief spikes in pump prices, AAA reported. As the market settles and supply and demand rebalance, prices usually come down after a couple of weeks. Crude prices rose as Idalia made landfall along Florida's Gulf Coast. Crude accounts for 50% of the cost of gasoline. With a 2-cent price decrease, Texas is now home to the fourth cheapest gas prices nationwide. Mississippi, Louisiana, and Arkansas have cheaper statewide averages than Texas's $3.42 average.
I was at Ohio State. We used to say, Buckeyes against the world, he said. Now I'm bringing that swag here, Texans against the world. It is not about what they write about us. It's about what we put on the field on Sundays, the work we put in. There's a lot of football to be played still, but we're going to walk around with that swag. We know what we can do. What they did Sunday was dominate a Steelers team that came to town having won 2 in a row. They built a 16-0 lead by halftime and used 2 fourth quarter touchdowns, capped by a 52-yard throw from Stroud, to roll to their most lopsided win since 2017. Stroud ranks fourth in the NFL with 1,212 yards passing, which are the second most yards in NFL history by a rookie in his first 4 games. He has thrown 6 touchdown passes and has set a rookie NFL record by making 151 pass attempts without an interception. Anything we ask him or pointed out to him as a point of emphasis, he's took it to heart, and he's shown those improvements the next week in the game. Coach DeMeco Ryan said, "And that's big time for a quarterback, where you can take the corrections from the meeting rooms to the practice field and then take them to the game. So it's impressive to see a young guy make those adjustments from week to week." Stroud said Sunday that he'd take a moment to savor the win before looking to the next game, where he'll try and build on what he's accomplished so far. "I want to do more," he said. "I want to be really great at this game. I want to put in the work every week." What's working? Houston's injury-decimated offensive line didn't allow a sack for a second consecutive week. The group, which lost 4 starters in camp, kept Stroud upright against T.J. Watt and the Steelers despite missing left tackle Laremy Tunsil for a 3rd straight game. "I thought overall, collectively, as an offensive unit, we played really well in stifling their pass rush," Ryan said. What needs help? The Texans did most everything right Sunday, but they could clean up their play a bit after getting 8 penalties for 63 yards against Pittsburgh. Stock up. RB Damian Pierce, the second-year player, had his best game of the season Sunday after struggling in the first 3 games. He had 81 of Houston's season-high 139 yards rushing after entering the game with just 100 yards rushing combined through the first 3 games. "It was awesome to see him just continuing to press forward," Ryan said. When he got the ball, he had a "I will not be denied" mentality, and it showed. Stock down. WR Robert Woods, he had a season low 26 yards on 3 receptions. Injuries. OL Kendrick Green hurt his knee on the fourth quarter Sunday. RT Titus Howard could make his season debut this week after missing the first 4 games after breaking his right hand in camp. Key number, 6-2. Stroud has thrown 6 touchdown passes compared to just 2 by Bryce Young, who was taken first overall by the Panthers in this year's draft. Next steps. Stroud and the Texans will look to improve when they visit the Falcons next week, where they'll try for their first 3-game winning streak since winning 9 straight in 2018.
This is the Dear Abby column. Relationship with husband's daughter eroded over time. Dear Abby, I have been married to Frank for 2.5 years. We met and married quickly. Best decision ever. We had raised 2 daughters as single parents with different parenting styles. Our girls now range in age from 30 to 33. They are adults with lives and children of their own. My daughters have accepted and come to love Frank. They have always been respectful and inclusive. In the beginning, his daughters treated me okay. But after 6 months, the older one decided I could not be around her children because, quote, I don't like her, unquote. I always treated her respectfully and did many things for her and her kids, babysitting, buying them things they needed, twice offering a place to stay when she was going through a divorce. She was always the boss of her father, and he puts her first over all else. There were things they would do secretly and exclude me. Now he doesn't see them at all. They don't talk, they explode. I am certain at some point I will be blamed for keeping him away. I no longer want anything to do with her, but I encourage Frank to see his grandchildren. I am an emotional mess over this. What do I do? Signed, Blending Badly in Nevada. Dear Blending Badly, because your husband's family dysfunction is affecting your emotional well-being, consult a licensed mental health professional to help rid yourself of this undeserved burden. Because someone chooses to blame you for something you haven't done doesn't mean you must accept it. If you still have a relationship with your husband's other daughter, concentrate on her, and you will all be happier. Dear Abby, I have a longtime friend who is the queen of the hypochondriacs. She is always sick or complaining that something is wrong with her, but she does nothing to improve her health. She has gone to holistic doctors for years to no avail. I suggested it's time for her to consult regular doctors since holistic ones weren't helping and because she doesn't follow their advice anyway. She has made appointments with regular doctors, but has too much anxiety to go. She has been excluded from activities with friends because she's always sick, but doesn't understand why she only has one friend. She also talks incessantly about her abusive, narcissistic mother, but doesn't realize she's a bit narcissistic herself. Should I tell her what I think about her, or just keep it to myself? Signed, Peeved in Pennsylvania. Dear Peeved, if she is hesitant to see a doctor who might actually get to the cause of her problems, it's probably because she's afraid of what she might hear. Of course, people who procrastinate for years are more likely to get bad news than those who are determined to nip any problem in the bud. If you can suppress your annoyance, instead of calling her something unpleasant, it would be more helpful to point out that hiding one's head in the sand is not an answer, and volunteer to go with her to her appointment. That's what a true friend does. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. This is the Dear Abby column. Woman wants help from biological mother. Dear Abby, would it be wrong to reach out to my biological mother for financial help? I was adopted when I was just 2 months old. I was lucky to have wonderful parents, but they are in poor health, and it's affecting both of them physically. I'm going into debt helping them out financially. They are on a fixed income that barely covers their expenses. Would it be wrong of me to ask my birth mother for help? We see each other occasionally. My birth mother sold her house and isn't hurting financially. I don't want to sound entitled. I just need some help. And I'm prepared for a no. Signed, Entitled to Anything? Dear Entitled, It isn't your birth mother's responsibility to support the couple who adopted you, particularly since the request for money would be ongoing. You stated that you see her only occasionally. If you do what you are considering, you may be seeing her less often. If your parents still have relatives, you might have some success if you approach them for the financial help you are seeking. If not, reach out to your local area agency on aging for guidance. Dear Abby, my husband Dan and I separated for 4 months. We have now reunited. However, his son Ryan told me he never wants to see me again. I wrote him a letter, expressed my remorse, and invited him to visit, but have received no response. Ryan shuns me now. My husband is going to invite him to visit, but I don't know how I will deal with it. I do not want to be his hostess. What should I do? Signed, Back Together in West Virginia. Dear Back, if Dan invites Ryan to visit, and if Ryan agrees, put on a smile and become the most gracious hostess since Pearl Mesta. If you don't know who she was, look her up. Your husband may be able to mediate a resumption of harmonious family relationships. If his son regarded your leaving as a personal rejection, Dan may be able to disabuse him of that idea and patch things up. Dear Abby, I was recently discharged from the hospital. Family members have told my husband to call if there's anything they can do to help. That makes one more thing for my husband to do, make a phone call. I'd like to suggest a better way to help. Family members, please call and tell my husband what specifically you would like to do to help. Some examples: bring a meal, do an errand, sit with me while my husband goes out to do errands, etc. I think the best thing anyone can do is bring a meal. It's one less thing for the caretaker to have to do. The food doesn't have to be homemade. It can be bought. Patient and caregiver still have to eat. Thank you, Abby, for letting me make this point. Signed, Happy to be home. Dear Happy, your point is well taken. You are right. It never hurts to volunteer what you could do to help someone recovering from a medical procedure. Some suggestions: do some marketing or laundry, or pick up their child from school and take them to the park to burn off some energy. You can contact Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.